This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. On today's roundtable, the president's address to the United Nations and what it may mean to the war on terror and the image of the U.S. in the Middle East. Plus, celebrity voices join the push to end the genocide in Darfur, but is anybody listening? And in a new study, whites speak out about being white. Joining us today from our New York Bureau are all three of our distinguished guests. Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, E.R. Shipp, Professor in Journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication, and John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow in Public Policy. Everybody, welcome to Reporters to the Roundtable today.
Thank you, Tony.
Let's begin here. President Bush addressed the United Nations yesterday, we all know that. And he asked during his appearance the world's leaders to back his freedom agenda. Let's listen.
Freedom by its nature cannot be imposed. It must be chosen. From Beirut to Baghdad, people are making the choice for freedom. And the nations gathered in this chamber must make a choice as well. Will we support the moderates and reformers who are working for change across the Middle East? Or will we yield the future to the terrorists and extremists? America has made its choice. We will stand with the moderates and reformers.
So let's do some Monday morning quarterbacking. The reviews coming in have talked about the president's speech being toned down, about how he has moved more towards diplomacy than what he's done previously. So why don't we start with you? Mike Myers, what do you say? Is anybody listening to what George Bush has to say about this now?
Well, it's hard not to listen because he's everywhere all of a sudden. But, you know, I don't think his speech, I must have been listening to the wrong speech. I don't think his speech was diplomatic at all. In fact, I'm getting a little tired of his hectoring tone, the hectoring nature of his voice. It always sounds like he's reading this from a script, that every speech he has is scripted, and he's reading a homework assignment. He should have said to the United Nations that it's the best chance for peace, and that the United States cannot be the world's policeman. You cannot have a situation of creating democracies through U.S. military occupation. He lacked the vision thing. There was an opportunity for him, particularly given Secretary General Annan's farewell address, to set the vision and to say why the United Nations is such an important world body and how the United States is going to work with the UN in order to achieve world peace and desirable change. And the world is full of opportunities for change, but he was full of rhetoric.
But I think there's one thing that's easy to miss in this one. And I'm saying this as somebody who has criticized Bush and this administration for its almost willful lack of eloquence in the past. This speech actually was one of their best ones. I mean, there was the usual bluster about freedom, etc. But I love the passages where he actually addresses the foreigners and gets down to an actual point, such as saying, as to the idea that we're at war with Islam, this propaganda is false and its purpose is to confuse you, etc. That's a kind of structured rhetoric that you haven't often heard from this kind of this particular administration, and I was stirred by it. He actually got down to cases and gave some evidence of serious thought, or at least serious thought by somebody who wrote the speech and told him what to say. Yeah. And I think that is actually a sign of progress. I hate to say that I loved that speech.
But it was really insulting.
Let me bring ER in, because I was looking to see what the reaction would be, particularly when he talked about Darfur and some others. And I know, as you do, ER, that in television, cutaways don't always tie up with what the person is saying. It depends on how the TV cameras operate. But when they did show some of the audience reactions, there didn't appear to be much to it. What was your take on what he said and how it was received?
Well, it depends on, again, when you were watching and depending on which channel you're watching. Mm-hmm. For these kind of events, I tend not to watch the networks and to go to C-SPAN because the camera is fixed and it's just focusing on what's going on and mm-hmm. not trying to interpret
it
for us. But what I thought most interesting is when I heard the president begin to talk beyond the people in the room, in the chamber, and try to talk to people who might be plugged in abroad. At first, I thought he's insulting the people in the room.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I thought, well, how effective is it for him to foment kind of a revolutionary spirit and people beyond that room who may or may not have had access, by the way, to television, radio, satellite, or whatever. But specifically when he talked about, I'll come back to Darfur when we get to that later, but particularly when he talked about what's going on with Iran, he was pretty much dissing the president of Iran who came on later to speak.
That's right.
And he spoke to the Iranian people, pretty much telling them they had made a mistake in electing this man mm-hmm. earlier this year.
A wonderful
And
thing
that
to
they
them.
Need to, you know, get their act together. He said the greatest obstacle to this future, meaning Iran's future, is that your rulers have chosen to deny you liberty.
I love that.
And to use your nation's resources to fund terrorism
to
and
cases.
Fuel extremism and pursue nuclear weapons.
Love
so
it.
That was a direct appeal that probably angered a lot of the diplomats who think that he's that kind of language is interfering with their abilities to bring the sides together.
It's not just this the language that offends. Who cares if the language offends? And that is not so diplomatic. It's that his audience was diplomats, representatives of nations, and he chose not to speak to the audience.
But to speak
beyond the audience, to the quote-unquote people in Iran and the people in Iraq.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? That wasn't his audience. He didn't see the people who
no,
were sitting
is
in front
his,
of
that
him
is, I beg
as
to,
his
I beg
audience.
To differ,
For
Tony,
the Security
because,
Council
excuse
events.
Me, excuse me. I beg to differ because it is his audience. Because you've got to get the UN as a body on the same page, not just those three nations, that fragile alliance, the old Europe of Britain, France, and United States,
you're certainly
and Germany.
Entitled to that view, but it was clear the president, as E.R. said, and I think as John intimated, was speaking beyond them directly to the people who would be
He was speaking to the United States to the United States audience, and I watched commercial TV because I wanted to know how much time he would run into the soap operas. And somebody must have told him, it's time for the young and the restless. Get the heck off the air.
Well, you know, go ahead, John, then I'm going to bring this point back.
I was just going to say that in terms of what's been said and what the tone of it was, I just think it has to be remembered that people who say things like Ahmadinejad says, they mean it. I think that we have a tendency to think that somehow when they say very threatening things, say, about Israel, that it's all just a kind of a bluster, that they're these colorful foreign people who use language in different ways than we do. But no, the fact is that they're saying things that they actually do mean. Mm-hmm. And when, for example, the American Jewish Committee has an ad in the Times today saying, you know, if Iran had nuclear missiles, would anyone within its range be safe? That's an important question. They mean things just as we do, and so sometimes there might need to be a tone. We have to respect them as human beings mm-hmm. by talking to them as serious people.
Well, you know, to follow up on the point that you raised, Mike Myers, if in fact the president was speaking to the American people, as you suggest, there's a new poll that's out today, USA Today and Gallup, suggesting that the president has gotten another bump or so in his approval rating, still below 50%, but a bump is a bump. And perhaps there'll be another poll in a few days that will suggest that he got even more of a bump, depending upon what the response to this speech was. But here's the question. At the same time, that poll shows that the American voting public is split on support of Democrats and Republicans running for Congress, 48% to 48%. So how do you see this speech, if it is directed at the American public, affecting that?
Well, I see it as more. I see every speech that the president has made in the last few months since his poll numbers have been in the basement as a perpetual campaign speech, trying to resurrect the Republicans, trying to hold on to both houses of the Congress, trying to save his presidency and the imagery that his presidency has. This is a situation where he is using every opportunity he can to scare people, to use the terror scare. We have gone from the land of the free and the home of the brave to the land of the gullible and the knee-jerk to the home of the scared. And this is what Bush's aim is. This is what he does. This is what he did in the UN. And I'm disgusted by it. I'm ashamed of it.
What do you say?
I'm not as passionate as Michael is on this one.
But
the thing that people have to remember is that a poll reflects a moment in time, mm-hmm. the moment when the poll was taken. And it also reflects the views of people who may not be telling the truth because they're saying what they think the poll taker wants to hear. So whatever his numbers were a week or so ago may not be the same as next week or next month. And this poll you're referring to came around the time of the fifth anniversary of 9/11 and a few other things. So people might have been thinking more about the fact that he's the commander-in-chief at a time that Michael did allude to, when people are more afraid, more cautious.
I understand.
When they start thinking about, though, those domestic issues that have not been addressed, then another poll may reflect that.
Absolutely. John, let's move on to another topic. I want to bring this to you first. As we know, Academy Award-winning actress Mira Sorvino helped lead a rally of about 20,000 people in New York City's Central Park on Sunday to protest violence in Darfur, a latest in a push of celebrities who are speaking out, George Clooney among them. On Monday, we caught up with actor Don Cheadle at a charity event, and he shared his thoughts on why countries are not doing more to aid Darfur.
For one, it's happening very far away, and we cannot see the effect of their deaths on our lives day to day. We have compartmentalized ourselves enough, I think, to where we can see something like that happen and bemoan it and say it's terrible, but still get on with our lives day to day. I think if it were someone in your family, I think if it were your neighbors, I think if somehow we felt that we were going to be personally threatened by it, then you would see people act. But we're sort of anesthetized right now, and it takes something very dramatic to happen to people to get them to react.
So, John, celebrity activism is nothing new, but how much influence do these A-listers really have?
Well, in this case, I'm afraid it's not going to be much, and it really is a tragedy to see the limits of human compassion. The Darfur victims can't speak to us the way a lot of other victims can. They're not online. We've never even heard of the languages that a lot of them speak. Students from these tribes are not in metropolitan universities in big countries. And so it's all very obscure. They're kind of mute to us. The fact that they're being killed with the equivalent of the N-word being used kind of doesn't come through, and it seems so abstract. But one thing that does strike me, and there's all sorts of blame to be left here on Darfur, is that yes, it's far away. Yes, it's an awful lot of people. Yes, it's hard to conceive of it. But I am quite convinced that if the people who were raping and killing and burning all of these people were white instead of brown and black themselves, then not a soul would have been harmed in Darfur over the past year. We would be cloning people to create soldiers to fix it. However, the fact remains that even now to just say let's do something is tough because, for example, you know, with the UN, how many people are there to put? If right now almost 5,000 are dealing with Lebanon and the idea is to have 15,000 there, in terms of taking care of things on that terrain with that kind of fury, what worries me is that even if we wanted to do something about it, we might not be able to with our resources so obviously stretched elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. I would say, though, that it's a good thing for these celebrities to be speaking out.
Why?
Because we wouldn't be talking about this subject now on this program, perhaps, if they had not been involved increasingly over the last few months, actually, from George Clooney to Angelina Jolie and all the people that we read about in my favorite publications, People, National Enquirer, etc. I watch Entertainment Tonight and all that. And if they are focusing their attention on Darfur, then that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, whether it will really translate into policy decisions is the next stage. But they're raising awareness. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then perhaps we can raise some kind of, we can sort of foment some kind of movement among college students as they did in the fight against apartheid. We may be able to get some Congress people to really get involved. And we may even be able to get the UN to put significant pressure on the Sudanese government, which right now is the bar to bringing in the peacekeeping troops that have been promised. So much that we can't find the troops, it's that Sudan has to get permission.
Does it matter to either of you that many of the celebrities who have been speaking out, or some of the ones who have gotten the most press, let me put it that way, are white, and that when you have black celebrities, now Don Cheadle spoke out, and we've gotten him on the air, and we've shown him, but there hasn't been, to my knowledge, a great outpouring of black celebrity voices on this issue. Am I wrong? And does that make a difference?
Well, you know, there's so many issues that everybody has to deal with, and maybe Don Cheadle can be seen as the beginning of something larger. But in terms of fame, given the fact that naturally there are more white stars than black ones, then I think white ones are certainly going to have to join into the effort.
It also depends on your definition of celebrity. I mean, the Congressional Black
Caucus. Michael Myers, have you spoken out about this?
Of course, many years ago. And I am a celebrity, you're right. Not celebrated. But I certainly think that the Congressional Black Choir, for example, has been talking about it. They're supposedly celebrities, at least in
And Nicholas Kristof in the Times, who I think had a lot to do with
And creating. A lot of people have been speaking, and you can't fault people for speaking up. I mean, you know, the Professor Hagen from Northwestern University says, in terms of this, the conservative numbers of 200,000 dead, conservative. And here again, a missed opportunity yesterday for President Bush, because we need the UN force of 20,000, not 15,000, but at least 20,000 in the Darfur area. And it should be clear in the answer to the question about sovereignty, no. The United Nations will not recognize sovereignty when it comes down to questions of genocide. This is what the United Nations was born to prevent, and the United Nations must act. No more questions of sovereignty when people are dying by the hundreds of thousands and being displaced by the millions.
Does the president's action with regard to naming this person as an envoy to the region, does that have any impact at all, do you think?
He named Secretary of State Rice, right?
No, Natsios.
No, it's a special envoy.
A special envoy. Does that make a difference?
But she's supposed to have some significant role in this. And my point was going to be that this is one of so many.
A brief point.
It will not be effective unless the people who are in power in the United States government begin to know how to do diplomacy and how to bring people to the table and bring about solutions to real problems, which is not rhetoric. And the other question I must put in, the other point about race, is that, you know, the majority of the media is white, and they bring on people who are like themselves, who look like themselves, and they don't know many black people. They don't have many black people in their Rolodexes.
They do.
Was like out of 1970.
Yeah, absolutely. That was an old
I tell you what,
we'll have to end our discussion on this, and we'll have to table, unfortunately, the discussion about the whiteness study.
I was looking forward to that. That's a good one.
That's a good one. In New York, Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, E.R. Shipp, Professor in Journalism, Hofstra University School of Communication, and John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow in Public Policy. Celebrities, all three. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll keep speaking up.